Thanks, Matthew. So we are studying the New Testament book, James, as you, many of you will know, most will know, and have come today to the third chapter, the beginning of the third chapter. And I want to propose something as we, before I read, that James, in stark terms, powerful terms, can't be missed terms, is drawing distinctions, clear distinctions between the craziness of the world he lived in and we live in, and the world in which Christ reigns, in which truth prevails, and so on. And there's a lot of ways in which the distinctions are clear. Think about the world we live in today. The world is out of control regarding human sexuality, for instance, regarding the place of money, regarding economics, regarding family life, and many more. But I want to suggest to us this morning that maybe the most important, remarkable, distinctive way in which the rule of God would be observed among the people of God and the world would be different is in the use of our speech. What we believe about what we say. The role of our announcements and our speaking and all that it does, the impact of what we say versus what we think. And we live in a world in which, let me go back one. Oh, I lost the, anyway, I was going to have a picture of a tweet up there. But so the world we live in today has more technology for communication, more ability to broadcast, widely broadcast ideas, foolishness, emptiness. We have the technology for communication, but we don't have anything we're saying. We don't use it to make any comments that are worth hearing. We get lost in frothiness and lies and manipulations and anger and deceptions, and they get broadcast further. They get announced louder, and yet there's nothing. There's no content that's worth hearing. The scriptures, however, have as their concern that what we say is important, be worth hearing and worth knowing. And so the text that we're going to look at today takes on. This is the most lengthy and extensive, in-depth discussion of what it means to use our tongues, to use our speech, the importance of human speech, what it does for us and can do for us, and so on. So this, let me read this. It's actually longer than we're going to touch this morning. The passage that's coming up next week completes this paragraph, this theme, but we're going to dive into it today. Not many of you, James says, should presume to be teachers, my brothers, because you know that we who teach will be judged more strictly. We all stumble in many ways. If anyone is never at fault in what he says, he is a perfect man, able to keep his whole body in check. When we put bits into the mouths of horses to make them obey us, we can turn the whole animal. Or take ships as an example. Although they are enlarged and are driven by strong winds, they are steered by a very small rudder, wherever the pilot wants to go. Likewise, the tongue is a small part of the body, but it makes great boasts. Consider what a great forest is set on fire by a small spark. The tongue also is a fire, a world of evil among the parts of the body. It corrupts the whole person, sets the whole course of his life on fire, and is itself set on fire by hell. This is hard-hitting. It's vivid. It's emotional. It's passionate. It's descriptive. We have images here that are unmissable. I mean, we grasp them immediately, what the point is. And what he's saying is that our speech, what is said about us at times, what we say about ourselves and others, what we agree to in terms of things that are being said around us. All of these have profound implications. Now, I want to just take a minute and ask if, and hopefully we'll do more of this, kind of see all this stuff together, but is there something, would someone here be willing to share something that you have either said or written or broadcast in some way on social media or whatever that had that you immediately regretted afterwards? Something that you set in motion by words you chose that had unintended consequences, or maybe intended consequences that raged out of control, that all of a sudden went further than you thought? Would either that, or something someone said about you, something that was vocalized or written that had a powerful effect on your life. You had nothing to do with the saying of the thing, but the results in your life were huge. Something you said or was said about you. Yeah,
Randy. Yeah, so just recently I did something. I'm in the community at First Step, and there's like 25 people there. And I took a sip of coffee during cleanup, and you're not supposed to do that, right? So this guy, instead of him giving me a pull-up, he had a woman come up and give me the pull-up. So I announced to the community, I have a loud, boastful mouth, and I said, instead of him doing it, you sent a woman up to do the dirty work, right? Man, what a mistake that was. It's like for 2 weeks, I went through heck. A little bit harder.
Right.
The whole community was like, ah.
Right.
And I paid for that dearly.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, some loud point you make that's unnecessary and has rippling effects and goes on for a long time. And yeah, you want to say something?
When I was in my 20s, my first full-time job, I was a secretary, and this was back in the 80s, and we got a new phone system that didn't work very well. And it was back in the days of the voicemail, and I was kind of in charge of setting it up. And it drove me crazy. And I was working in the dean's office at San Jose State. And one day I just had enough. And I sent, this is back in the day before emails, I wrote a long, eloquent memo to the dean complaining. And I ended it saying, I am so angry, period. And I thought it was going to the dean. You know what he did? He photocopied that thing and sent it to the phone people, verbatim. He just sent it right off. And so they came back to me, because I was so nice to them. They came back and they said, what's going on? And I had so much explaining to do because I was just angry. And it taught me a lesson that don't you ever, ever write anything professionally when you're mad.
Yeah.
And these days it's worse because you have a click of a button.
Yeah.
Back then I had to print and photocopy. it just haunted me because I looked like an idiot because I was like a little girl having a temper tantrum.
Okay. Yeah. One more.
Yeah. My son and I, we don't speak to each other. We haven't for a couple of years. And we had a falling out with a bit of an argument. And a few months after that, he called my mother. Told my mother that during that argument that I hit his girlfriend, and my mother didn't believe it. As God is my witness, I've never laid a hand on a woman in anger. And although my mother doesn't believe it, she still, that's my grandchild telling me this, but this is my son, and she's saved. My mom and my sister both are kind of iffy.
Right. Yeah, yeah. That's a great example. Now think about how carelessly the world advocates that we use speech. That whatever you feel, you declare. Stuff gets published. Stuff gets announced. Angry, tweets. Angry outbursts, manipulative speech, frothy, empty, stupid stuff. All of it gets published and republished and retweeted and advanced. We live in a world that it's as if the things we say don't matter at all. And yet the insight of Scripture is that they matter tremendously. They have a huge effect. And that's the main argument here, by the way, to begin with. The first of the main arguments is that speech is powerful. He uses three word pictures. One is a ship. Big ship, right? Huge. The rudder's not very big. But the rudder steers the ship. The ship ends up going where the rudder directs it to go. And one of the things that's true about a rudder and a ship is you don't see the rudder. It's under the water. You see the ship cruising around. You don't see the influential rudder steering it. Same with a horse, right? You don't see the bit in the mouth of the horse. But the horse goes where the rider directs, given this tiny little piece that's in his mouth. So the small thing, the unobtrusive thing, the subtle thing, well, it's not a big deal. I just said something. It's not a big deal, but it is a big deal. Phil?
I have a short story about something like this, but it's maybe even a little more ominous than what we've mentioned.
Right.
I was doing some field work once, and I had access to a power drop. It was a plug in the wall, but this was out in the field on a post. And this the amount of power we were using was in the milliwatts. We're talking about maybe 25 cents or 30 cents a month for the electricity. And one of my associates from another institution came along and said he was setting up an instrument near our instrument, and could he use this power? And the only thing he told me was he was doing a little construction work to set up an instrument. So I thought I was being gracious and helpful. And I said, yes, he could use the power. And he had some tools with him. And I thought I gave him permission to use this power for a few minutes to do a little quick construction. But what happened was he set up, he built a little concrete blockhouse and set an instrument inside it and used the power to build the blockhouse. But then he connected the instrument permanently to our plug. And this was a government plug. And I unwittingly gave him permission to permanently use government power.
Okay.
For another
bad idea. Yeah, I think we get the point, but that's a good example. Yeah.
And what this boils down to is it's not just important to think about what you want, it's important to understand the other person.
Okay. So the big idea, and Phil's illustrating and so on, is that apparently small decision, we think a statement, a comment, a written point, a tweet, whatever, we didn't mean much by it, but what happens is tremendously powerful, and it can be good or bad, by the way. The ship could get steered into the harbor. That's one of the points James made. You know, you have a rudder, the horse can make it to the finish line because the bit does the work, and it's a good thing. It controls. The powerful outcome is a good one, or it can be a very bad one. The small spark, the unobtrusive spark, lights all of Napa County on fire, or all of Los Angeles County on fire, or whatever it is. So the point is we underestimate how important the things we say are. Now, let me just talk about some negatives first. I mean, we're going to talk about teaching in a minute, because that's one of the positives. Good teaching, the importance of teaching, hearing truth, taking in truth is one of the ways that speech is used to a very good end, and we'll get to that in a minute. But consider some of the little things we do to try and pretend like hurtful stuff doesn't matter. Have you ever used the phrase, just saying? I'm just saying. For instance, most of your coworkers think you're a phony. They're just saying. Wait a minute. Most of my coworkers think who have you talked to? What does that mean? Is that in a report someplace? But just the just saying thing is sort of, I'm not really doing anything. I'm not really sowing any seeds. I'm not really crushing your heart. I'm just saying. Just saying. Or my kids are terrific. But your kids are all brats. No offense. What? You know, as if the little tagline at the end, the no offense thing, could take away the offense and the pain and the stab to the heart. And, you know, the old kids thing, sticks and stones will break my bones, but names will never hurt me. That's not true. Never been true. Dave? Yeah, it's as if we kind of know we got to soften this thing, because what we're doing really is dangerous and hurtful. It has implications. It'll not go away. It doesn't end. And you know, James is no nonsense about this stuff. We've already seen earlier in the book that, you know, be slow to speak, quick to listen. He says in chapter 1, if anyone thinks he's religious and doesn't bridle his tongue, he deceives his heart. The way we talk and use language, all kinds of use of language, is really important, and it's very powerful. Think of the positives. Someone says, "I love you with all my heart." What difference does that make? How important might that be? Yes, I'll marry you. You're welcome here. I see you. I know you. I remember you. I believe you. We've made a place for you. All of those kinds of speech that you realize someone has esteemed us and believed in us and knows us and cares. All of that speech is tremendously powerful as well. And the question is, do we underestimate how much good we can do or how much pain we can cause by being careless about our speech? So let's take the issue of teaching, because that's where James starts here, and I think it's we might learn something from this, and then we'll try and apply all of this at the end. Not many of you should presume to be teachers, my brothers, because you know that we who teach will be judged more strictly. We all stumble in many ways. If anyone is never at fault in what he says, he is a perfect man, able to keep his whole body in check. So there's a caution about teaching, and James is using himself. We who teach, we all stumble. He knows that he is in the role of a teacher, and he knows that others will accept the role of teaching. The church, the people of God, need teaching. They need godly teaching. They need wise teaching from the proper people, because if no one will explain the ways of God to us, how will we know? Our God is a communicative God. Jesus is the Word of God made flesh. He brought the universe into being with his speech. God has much for us to say, as much to say and much for us to understand. But how will we know without teaching? So good teaching is crucial. But the problem is teachers are influential. And it's enough to ruin your own life by saying something stupid, right? You say something that brings pain to your own life, that veers your course off into a ditch. You do something dumb in your own life. But teachers have the effect of ruining other people's lives as well. And you can even think of your children. How often have we seen our kids parroting the dumb thing we said, or, oh my goodness, look at him. He's doing exactly what I did, you know, to him at that age. He's adopted my attitudes, or she's acting in ways that she learned from me. And so it's not even just Bible teachers, church teachers, but just in any setting where we are the instructor, where someone's learning from us, we need to be careful, because we're passing on both the good and bad things that are true of us. The second thing he says about teaching is not only is that it is important, but it's going to come under stricter judgment. And what's important about that is that a teacher is not only responsible for getting the words right. If you're a math teacher, you should be able to add. So it's important that when you speak about mathematics, 2 and 2 equals 4, you don't get that wrong. But the judgment is not just did you get the content right, It is, are you the right kind of person? Teachers are judged not just by their language, but by their character. We learn from someone because of who he or she is, not just what they say. Jesus said that out of the overflow of the heart, the mouth speaks. You know what's coming out of your mouth? What's in your heart? And teachers are going to be held accountable for being the kind of folks that they're speaking about, as well as speaking well the words of God. So it's absolutely important that there be good teaching, but it's also important that teachers take very seriously what they're calling, what they're called to. Andy?
Yeah, I had one of the guys in my recovery Bible study. He said one of his teachers in elementary school said, "Well, you're stupid and you'll never amount to anything." Oh, wow. And that became his own inner voice because somebody in authority has said
right.
that, and he believed it. And that was at least part of why he got into addiction. That was what he believed about himself as a person in a teaching position.
Right.
That said that to
him. Right. The authority of a teacher is it comes not only the role you're given the title of teacher, that's important. You are the kind of person that and you will come through in your teaching. Who you are will come through. You can only fool people so long on so many levels, because eventually your character is going to instruct people. You need to tell the truth and live the truth. Theodore, quickly. Okay, and the best kind of teaching is to help you see, not just help you find your own way to what's true and important. I think that's a great point. That's a good point. But here's what's also true about teachers, says James. They're going to stumble. Your character, the character of the one teaching, is important. The information, the content of what is taught is important. We need to know what God has said about himself and about us. We need to know it from people who believe it and live it themselves, but they cannot ever be held to the standard of perfection. And that's what James says. We all stumble in many ways. We can't control our tongues. That's the big point. That's going to come up next week, finally, when he gets to the end of this crescendo of vivid imagery and passion and so on, is that the tongue cannot be tamed. We're never going to say all the right things all the right time. And then part of it is because our hearts are broken. What's inside us is what's coming out. And what's inside us isn't entirely fixed yet. So teachers are, and the word James uses here is stumble. They're not manipulators and users and deceivers who are deliberately using the place of teaching to take advantage of others. But they make mistakes. They get it wrong. They have a bad day. They're distracted and heartbroken, and stuff comes out, and you hurt people inadvertently, and you mislead them without meaning to. And you know what I've discovered over the years of both being in the role of speaking to others and much more often the one trying to learn from other people, is that the stumbling of the teacher is often the best thing for everybody else. Because everything depends on what you do when you screw up, right? Every parent's going to screw up. Every teacher, every pastor, every leader, every boss, every older brother, every grandfather, something's going to come out of your mouth that you cannot get it back. I did not mean that. Oh no, why did I say that? Why did I go there? How did I get started on this? What in the world? But are you able to acknowledge what you did? Are you able to ask for forgiveness? Part of speech that's healthy is apologizing, is confessing, is asking for help. So the character of the teacher is not only godliness displayed, but failure acknowledged. What do we do when we stumble? And again, I think a high percentage of what I've learned from the best people I've learned it from includes those times when they said, I made a botch of it. I'm so sorry. Will you forgive me? Or will you listen this time and forget what I said or whatever? So James has a high view of teaching here, and again, teaching formally, teaching as parents, more informally here and there, but Who you are and what you say are both important, and how you handle failure is crucial.
Right. Yeah, Steve, so in actuality, we're all teachers, aren't we?
Right, yeah. Right. Somebody's learning from you. Some people have bigger platforms, but everybody is in the role of influence on some, at some time or other, and I think James's language is important for that. So what do we make then of this spark that leads to this forest fire that's set on fire by hell? The tongue is a very world of evil. And I mean, it's reminds me of talks I got from football coaches at halftime, right? I mean, it's like, for crying out loud, you know, it's, you know, it says impassioned and yelling and waving your hands. And it's all, it's there's a degree of hyperbole, I think, to this, but it's for the point of saying, wake up, get serious. This is serious. The interesting thing about this whole paragraph, even to the end, is James never says do anything or stop doing anything. There's no commands in here except for the reference to the teacher. He's talking about all this dramatic stuff, but he doesn't ever say therefore accomplish something. He's just trying to stir us into seeing what happens with our speech, our out of control speech, our what's possible, how much pain you can inflict. The tongue is a very small member of the body. Tiny, you know, whatever, I don't know what your body weight, what percentage your tongue makes up, but it ain't much. But it can ruin everything else that's true of you. Set stuff on fire, and the fire burns, and other people get burned as well. So I want to, since James doesn't propose what to do steps, I want to propose too, and maybe we can, I forget, when do we start the sharing time?
Anyway. 10:15.
Okay, so we'll discuss these for 10 minutes or so, 8 minutes. Two steps to take. One is to make an accounting. What do you, think about all the things you've said in the last day or the last week or written or heard from other people. What have you cheered for? What have you reacted to? But mostly think of yourself. What? Why do you say the things you say? Listen to yourself. What am I fascinated by? Why do I listen to this much garbage? Or visit these websites for this amount of time and take this stuff in and wallow around in this and be have my time wasted by that? What speech is fire making? It's ship steering stuff. What am I fascinated by? What am I saying? What am I not saying? Where have I failed in courage? Where have I talked when I should have listened? What? So, step one, in accounting. What's true of me? Well, if I'm honest, what am I like regarding my speech? Not anything else. Regarding the ideas and the words and the statements that seem really kind of close to home for me. And the second is, what am I going to do to change? That James says in chapter 3, again, this will come up next week, we cannot tame the tongue. You are never going to succeed in completely stopping saying stupid stuff, hurtful stuff. You're never ultimately going to win the deal where you have finally gotten to the point where you'll never get it wrong again. But he does say in chapter 1 that you can bridle the tongue. It's a different Greek verb. You can control what you say to a degree. You can stop the behaviors that seems, or at least curtail, or at least lessen, or go the right direction instead of the wrong direction, or make a start that needs to be made. There are choices we can make to begin the process of speaking well instead of badly, listening well instead of badly. What am I going to do to take step one, at least, to bridle my tongue? Rick?
My favorite proverb in 15:1 says, a gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. And every time I follow that, I'm glad I did. And every time I don't do it, I pay a price.
Yeah, yeah. So what someone maybe if you're willing to or can, what would an accounting be like in my life or yours? What, just some willingness to share a discovery or an awareness about yourself, how you speak, how you use speech. What do you see? Or what you listen to, or what you cheer, or what do you see when you look at yourself regarding language?
Poorly.
Pardon me?
I just said
poorly. Okay.
About this, and the only thing that's in my mind is the last conversation I had with Brian was an argument.
Mm-hmm. But you can bless other people. This is where he says, you know, we stumble. Everybody stumbles. What do you do with it? You share it, and maybe someone else will learn from it, and you'll be different going forward. You won't. The bell will go. The next time you want to do something dumb that's sort of similar, you know, maybe the bell will go off, and can you know we can learn from it. Yeah, Dre. Yeah.
He never done nobody nothing. Everything he said out of his mouth, somebody hated.
Yeah.
So how you gonna move with people? He only lived to be 33 years old.
Right.
I mean, some people living to be 102 years old. So what? Their speech is better than him, and he only lived to be 33 years old. John the Baptist went through the same thing. All these guys from the Bible, biblical times, they all died young.
Right.
Because you know, hey, they were saying the thing that people didn't want to hear.
Yeah.
So, well, how can you win?
Well, telling the truth and paying a price for it is a good thing. I mean, that's steering the ship into the harbor. I mean, that's good. It's when I'm angry, and you know, it's me being the aggressor. It's me saying the hurtful thing.
Got angry too.
Right. Well, Jesus got angry, but it's righteous anger. I'm just saying, if you've regretted something you've said, what can we learn from that? What can I discover from that? All right, there you go.
Still not
no, not. Yeah, way in the back. Kelly, is that you? I can't tell.
I speak with passion.
Yeah.
I speak with passion, and it's a double-edged sword because I feel so much in one direction, but then the consequences of my words sometimes have a reversing effect.
Yeah.
So I should listen more than speak.
Yeah, and James already said that. Be slow to speak, quick to listen. So,
slow to anger.
Theodore?
That's easier said than done.
Right. Theodore?
Yeah. I'm thinking of step 10, continue to take first one where you were wrong, promptly admit it. And the more I practice that, the more I'm likely to keep my mouth shut.
Remember, speech is good. It's not all, I mean, teaching is good. There are important things to say. There are apologies to offer and corrections and truth to tell. It's not. He's not saying that the person who never says anything is the ideal person. It's a person that cares, that realizes speech is powerful and important and cares about doing the right thing. Yeah, I don't know your name.
Brandon.
No, I was...
Francisco.
Yeah.
And, you know, before I realized anything, and I was like, well, you know, that wasn't very nice of me either. But.
Right. But again, where did that come from? Maybe that's a good question. Anger and fear. You know, I thought I was going to get killed, right? So, I mean, okay, it was being afraid in a setting like that's right, but what makes me attack the person? You know, is there something I can learn from why I did what I did? It comes from, you know, that's what Jesus said. It's out of the heart that the mouth speaks. Those are the questions that are probably the most important for us to ask. Why do I, and especially if it's repeated stuff. You know, I've gotten myself in trouble 10 times for this very same thing. Why? What is it about me that keeps doing it over and over again? And that those are worth.
I think the steps four of making additional inventory to see the pattern of your sin in your life is very helpful. And then combining that with step 10, taking a nightly inventory, where did the pattern show up today? And it's not, the nightly inventory is not just the negative, like you said. I think of it as 1G, where did God show up? 2G, what good happened? 3G, what goofs happened? Where did those besetting sins, those repetitive sins in the function? I mean, it showed up to me yesterday. I was trying to control how my husband talked to my son in a way that disrespected him. And he called me on it, and so I had an opportunity to ask for forgiveness and move on. So that was an accounting. And but
was your son able to see the whole interaction?
No. Yeah, he did, but he didn't see us talk later. So I was thinking that maybe I should go to him and say, "Oh, there's an epilogue to all that you didn't see, and you know, I had to repent from."
Yeah. So parenting is complex. I mean, in some ways, maybe the dad needed correct. I mean, let's assume the correction was valid. It's the disrespect that's wrong. That's a problem. And so all of a sudden, my son realizes it's hard to be parents. You know, we're both of us are. You know, and so someday he's going to have all of that information maybe to take into his parenting.
Well, he's 22, so you know, I mean, the lessons keep on learning.
Yeah. All right, we have time for sharing, and I think the mic will be here. It's not at the moment.